about?
Well, if he suffers from it, then we suffer from it too, because he's armed.
Yeah, I would tend to agree.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, the final 15 minutes of Bathrop Spear's broadside, Civil Rights for the Poor. This is a show that airs twice weekly, Thursdays at 6 in the evening until 8, and then Sundays at 11 o'clock in the morning until 1:30 in the afternoon. You can be a part of the show, of course, by calling in at 427-3772. If you want to be a guest on this show, give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And it looks like we have another caller coming in there. Is this a caller that wants to be on the air?
Ah, you're talking about the beach area.
Right here. It says Vision for the Future.
Oh, yeah. This is from the Coalition for the Beach Area.
Right.
I got a copy of it here, actually.
And I'm looking at it, and it sounds really good. You read the whole thing, and then it says on the endorsers list.
Uh-huh.
Nani Alejandres, who works for, Bodies Unidos, I saw his name on there, and I'm just wondering, why would you support something like this when, there's not going to be low-income housing, all these bad things that the plan is going to do. I just don't understand why someone like him would support this. Do you know anything about that?
I don't. I also noticed another strange name on there, right under his name, Esther Bradley Delgado, of the Daily Bread Food Pantry, who is, I have a great respect for her work for hungry people, and I'm just very surprised. What I'll try to do, though, caller, is investigate this and get back to you. If you listen to the Sunday show, maybe we can have an answer for you on that.
Great. Maybe you could call up Buddy Sunios and ask them, because sure, if they don't understand what's going on, I'm sure he's informed.
Well, perhaps what you can do is give a call, and you can maybe if we can put you to work and have you find out and report back on Sunday.
Great. What time is the show again?
The show begins at 11 and goes until 1:30 in the afternoon.
Okay.
And again, the number you should write down, you probably have already, is 427-3772. And this also applies, by the way, to anyone else who's listening. If you can't call in during showtime, but you want to say something on the air, give me a call at HUFF headquarters. HUFF is an acronym for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And the phone number is pretty easy to remember. It's 423-HUFF, 423-4833. So you can do that if you want, caller.
Thank you very much, Robert.
Hey, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I also want to point out that we actually had an offer by Phil Baer to be on the air, but we are so swamped for time, and we're about to be bumped by Uncle Dennis, who comes in very promptly and just likes to have his 2 hours. He's got a lot to cram into his 2 hours. His show on Earth First is full of information, vital information about environmental concerns. We really have to kind of move right along here. Hopefully we'll have Phil on the air, either a taped interview with him or possibly a phone interview. Who knows? Maybe we can even coax the old codger into the studio on Sunday. He reminded me, however, for those who do want to engage in some kind of real activism, and I keep urging the Beach Area Working Group to get their butts out on the street and do some fast, fancy, flashy stuff before this, it's almost too late. It's the 15th is the plan. The last chance to debate the plan, of course, is the 15th, as I mentioned before, September 15th, Tuesday evening, 7 o'clock at the Civic. There is a meeting of the Beach Area Working Group and other opponents of this Seaside Company giveaway on Sunday, which will be, I guess, the 13th, at the Calvary Episcopal Church. It's the big red church downtown across from the Nickelodeon, for those of you who know the downtown area. That's at 7 o'clock on Sunday. And for those who want more information about the Beach Area Plan, and possibly, caller, the answer to your question, if you're still listening on the air, I should say off the air, by your radio, is to give a call to Phil Baer. He is taking calls for the Beach Area Working Group, although this is not their official number. It's 423-0170. Again, 423-0170, so you might want to give him a call straight away. And we're also going to, of course, at that time be talking, on Sunday that is,
more about what the city attorney has to say about all this, because one question that's come to mind for me has been, why is this plan being rushed? I mean, is anything going to actually be done by the city council that cannot be undone by the next city council? And of course, Michael Rotkin and all the proponents of the plan, or at least Rotkin, I think Kennedy has said this too, know anything we do can be undone by the next city council. Whereas critics of the plan are worried that memoranda of understanding or contracts can be signed and set in cement. So I contacted the city attorney, John Barasoni, to get his perspective on that. He claimed that nothing could be done within the 6 weeks between September 17th and the November election that would allow anything to be set in concrete that couldn't be changed by the city council. I went back to Phil Baer and asked for his view. Phil said, that's not true. The Third Street realignment can be started immediately through the redevelopment agency and through the planning department. I called the planning department, left them a message, got no response, but Barasoni did return my second call and discussed with me the what could be done. He said, it is true, for instance, that that what could be done is appraisers could be hired by the planning department to appraise the property, but that's about all they could do and during the period of time between the city council approval of this plan on September 15th and the November elections in early November. Whether he is accurate, we are going to try to find out through continued dialogue and discussion on this subject, the very controversial Beach South of Laurel plan. I'm going to now turn to continue the interview on the street with Lloyd Lawrence. We have an intervening interview with Jeannie, who you may know, again, as I said, is the woman who rides a bicycle downtown. She's great deal of pain a lot of the time. She has a back injury, and she reports a problem with a police officer as well. Hi, to give us a hug and say hi. Hi, Jeannie.
Hi.
Jeannie, I was told about 2 or 3 weeks ago you had an incident with a police officer near the Pacific Cookie Company.
Right. I coasted my bike from the curb to 10 feet from the curb over to park it in front of the cookie store, and the guy has been kind of unfriendly to me before.
You know who you're talking about?
I don't know his name too well.
Uh-huh.
And he stepped in front of me. I was coasting on the bike. I hadn't gotten off the bike, but I wasn't riding the bike. I wasn't sitting on the saddle. My feet were on the ground, and he stopped. He saw me. He was in front, walking down the Pacific, and he saw me and stepped in front of the bike before I could stop, so that I was forced to run into him. And I said to him, I said, you forced me to run into you. Why did you do that? And he said, I decided to give you a ticket for riding on the sidewalk. I said, I wasn't riding. I had my feet on the ground. I was just coasting it. And he saw me, and he just put his foot right in front of the front wheel without warning me.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I'm giving you a ticket for riding your bicycle on the sidewalk. I said, I wasn't riding. I was only coasting it, and, you know. So I think it's dumb. And I want to go to court.
When was this? What time of day?
During the afternoon, on the 13th of August.
And were there any witnesses?
No.
Actually, I think there was apparently a German gentleman who saw you and became very angry at the police officer for giving you a ticket, because a number of people saw this and they felt you were being harassed by the police officer.
That's what I felt like too. I felt that way. Earlier in the day, he had singled me out for something else.
Same officer?
Yeah, the same officer. And I had felt like he was like persecuting me or just riding on me. I don't know why.
What was the earlier incident?
And I was riding up Pacific, and he wanted me to, I don't remember. He wanted me to stop. I wasn't doing something right with my bicycle, and then he admonished me that, you know, this is one-way street and you can't ride the wrong way on one-way street.
You were riding the other way up the Pacific?
I wasn't. I was riding in the right direction.
You were?
Yeah, so I said to myself, what is wrong with him? And I just felt like he was singling me out.
You have a copy of your ticket?
Yeah.
Can I see it?
Yeah.
So, Lloyd, you say that there is a man you're trying to help into the mental health program whose camping gear was taken by police?
That's what Gus tells me. Gus tells me that they ran him out the West Cliff area, the same area that we have in question here. And that I said, well, where's your sleeping bag? And he says, the police took it away. And so my daughter and sons bought him an executive brief type thing to carry on an airline, and a very light blanket so that it wouldn't look like camping, and tried to help him find a way.
When was this? Did this happen?
A couple of weeks ago. Like I say, I came over here to get out of the heat from the San Joaquin Valley, and I have 10 kids in San Jose, so I go to their homes and park in the driveways of their homes when I'm in the area. And then I have 48 grandkids, so I get in there and do a lot of grandbaby hugging, you know.
I see.
And I have 15 great-grandkids.
What a great-grandfather you are.
And well, I certainly wasn't treated like anything great this morning, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
That's very disturbing, to see that kind of conduct. And I know it's a hackneyed statement to say it's Gestapo tactics, but...
That's how it felt?
That's how it felt. I just imagine how the people in Germany with the Gestapo presence, I just felt that way. I thought, God, is this what I went to war for? You know, I spent a year in combat. 10,000 of my buddies in that year died. You know, the 50-some thousand that died in Korea. And it makes you wonder, what the hell is going on in this country? What's happening? You know, this is like a police state here.
They're trying to gentrify the downtown.
No, I have to say this in all fairness. I have observed wonderful police officers doing wonderful things in this city and on this street here on Pacific in the 7 weeks that I've been here, dealing with the homeless and what have you. I cannot say that about three or four of them that I've seen that are not right. Just not right for the job.
Thank you, Lloyd.
Okay, thank you.
And that was Lloyd Lawrence talking on Sunday night about his experiences on Sunday morning with Officer Brent Northrup. We're now about to go out on a funny note from the Free Radio Santa Cruz's, actually it's the Jolly Roger Comedy Troupe again, so hang tough, Shaz, you get 25 seconds.
Well, thank you, folks, for tuning in to Bathroom Spear's Broadsides.
It's
and
not Bathroom Spear, it's Bathrobe Spear. You're going to get it, Shaz.
Yeah, well, I could use some more of it, so thanks.
Use a bathroom, I would think.
Yeah, you said it.
Thank you, Shaz. And join us again next Sunday at 11 o'clock when we shall return 96.3 FM.
We were afraid of that.
Well, it's going to happen.
They knocked on my door about 4 p.m. They had feds written all over them. I could tell by the wriggling antenna, six legs, and the little metathorax that they were the FCC. They told me they were tracking pirate radio broadcasters. Smart ones. Broadcasting from cars, broadcasting from inaccessible mountaintops, broadcasting fresh perspectives and unusual music. It was their job to put a stop to it, and they needed my help. The money was good, so I took the job. Although the FCC guys gave me the creeps, they kept running behind the refrigerator whenever I turned the lights on. We tracked a signal to a private residence near Brisbane. We could hear them laughing inside the house. It sounded like a real party. We were there to spoil that party. The way the FCC explained it, the airwaves belonged to them. Why is that, I asked them as they got ready to slip in through the cracks in the floorboards. Because they didn't buy a license, they answered, their trochanters rubbing in anticipation. How much is a license, I asked. Between 50,000 and 100,000, they answered. Suddenly, I realized I was at the wrong party. The micro-broadcasters weren't hurting anybody. As a matter of fact, their music was fresh, their perspectives unusual, and the flavor was decidedly not corporate. Hold it right there, radio people. We're the FCC, they said, antenna waving. And they banged on the door. But these radio people were smart, very smart. They knew the FCC had no warrant, and they knew the FCC. They turned some bright porch lights on, and the FCC scuttled away into the foggy night. I stood there on the porch for a moment, wondering whether to tell the radio pirates how much I'd like the program. As I walked away, I heard them talking.
Hey, man, how often does that happen?
Don't worry about it. You sprinkle a little boric acid on the baseboard, you may never come back.
I heard diatomaceous earth works, too.
I knew boric acid was non-toxic, but I knew it could kill. It crossed my mind to warn the FCC in case they ever came back. After all, they were my clients. And then I thought, nah.
And that's our theme song, and here's our show. 2.5 hours of talk, tapes, interviews, music, whatever we can find around the studio to throw at you. But the main focus is civil rights for poor people in Santa Cruz and also in other cities. We occasionally stray to Portland, Eugene, San Diego, Santa Monica, even New York City. And probably we're going to stray today to Prescott, Arizona. We went through Prescott a couple of months ago, checking things out, and did some interesting interviews, some of which we played on the air, some of which we haven't. We're going to be doing some of that. But of course, the main focus of the show is Santa Cruz, and that's why we invite you to phone in to our call-in studio line with any local issues that concern homelessness, police abuse against poor people, or even against not-so-poor people, because it's important to kind of set up a coalition where we're all aware of what's going on in all sectors and kind of uniting to share our experiences and share our strengths. The phone number here in the studio is 427-3772, 427-3772, and our voicemail, in case you are a little bashful about going on the air, but you want to get in touch with Free Radio, either to offer some resources or to ask some questions or possibly to seek your own show, and we do have some open slots. You want to go on the air with subjects of public interest, 427-4523. 427-4523 is the Free Radio Santa Cruz voicemail. Email frsc@cruzio.com, frsc@cruzio.com. And the post office box is 7507 Santa Cruz, California, 95061. 7507-95061. Send us your public service announcements, your demos, your loop tapes. We are interested, and we do want to make this as broad a community station as possible. Though indeed our focus has to do with basic civil rights for people and for those usually excluded from the mainstream media. So get in touch with Free Radio Santa Cruz and get in touch with Bathrop Spears Broadsides. That's this show at 427-3772. If you hear something you agree with, if you hear something you disagree with, if you hear something that you think is incomplete and needs to be responded to. We've been talking a lot about the Beach Flats in weeks past. Beach Flats BSAL plan, as they call it, Beach South of Laurel plan, the Canfield City Council's scheme to put a chunk of change in Charlie Canfield, the boardwalk owner's pocket, for a massive expansion of the boardwalk in the hopes that somewhere down the line a little bit will tinkle down to the city. That so far has not been proved to my satisfaction. It's going to look like it'll take at least 40 years by the estimate of one activist, Sandy Brown, who's been studying the situation pretty carefully, for that to happen. But more important is the process. We haven't even gotten any real adult debate around the issue. Instead, the city council majority, 5-2, is already locked in on the Canfield candygram, as I call it, and they're about to pass it, and they will be passing it on the 17th this week, the Beach South of Laurel plan.
And that is a meeting at the Civic Auditorium no one should miss, the 17th. Actually, the 15th, you'll be able to come to the Civic at 7 o'clock and actually register your opposition to this plan. On the 17th, you get to come and watch the council ignore your opposition and pass it anyway. Both interesting, and you can make your presence known on both occasions, one way or another. They indeed are holding it in the Civic, which there was a rumor around that they were not going to do that. They were going to try to shoehorn everybody into the City Hall. But what they did do was they moved the date up a month, cut off a month of the debate. They were going to go back to the final decision on the 20th of October. They had made this commitment to the voters at the beginning of the summer, the Santa Cruz City Council, or I should say the Canfield Council, or Sub-Council, which constitutes the majority of the Santa Cruz City Council. Hernandez, Rotkin, Matthews, Campbell, and Kennedy. That's the five pro-Canfield votes, the Canfield clones on the council. On the other side are Byers and Mayor Celia Scott, who unfortunately is not running for re-election, so she's sort of on the sidelines in this one, although she's still pulling her weight at city council meetings, the few that we have left before the November elections when the council will change composition. Now, normally I'm not much of an electoral system booster. I think it's money driven. I think it's weighted in favor of incumbents. I think it's meaningless, one party masquerading as two parties. But occasionally you'll get elections where real issues present themselves, and this November election is one of those. I encourage you to register and vote to kick out the Canfield City Council and to essentially offer a real alternative, because I think that though we can't place our faith in the council candidates that are going to be elected, I don't, at least not yet, there is a significant chance that these people are better on both holding back the Canfield giveaway, and also, interestingly enough, and I'm going to be playing a segment of tape around this shortly, all four of the candidates running against the Canfield shoe-ins, Steinau, Quartararo, and Walton, those are the conservatives we don't want in, these four candidates have supported ending the sleeping ban. Ending the sleeping ban. You heard it here first, folks. Every one of these four candidates has publicly come out for repeal of the sleeping ban. I think that's fair to say. Even Fitzmaurice, I'd say, would favor not making it a crime for people to sleep. Amending the law to make it legal for people to sleep somewhere in the city of Santa Cruz without being harassed. And this, of course, is a very mild change. To be able to sleep is going to be kind of hard if you can't cover yourself with a tent in the rain. It's going to be kind of hard if you're crammed into a tiny place to do it in. But it's a beginning, at least, to know that you're not going to be arrested for falling asleep or covering up with a blanket when you have no other alternative. So that decision by four city council candidates, Chris Crone, Keith Sugar, Tim Fitzmaurice, and Pat Clark, to openly call for the end of the sleeping ban shows a significant dividing of the ways from the old candidates. We haven't really had an election where candidates have come out for ending the sleeping ban who were endorsed by major organizations like SCAN, Santa Cruz Action Network, the group that's usually the kingmakers in this city. SCAN candidates traditionally win. We haven't had a situation where a majority of all the candidates running favor ending the sleeping ban. I say a majority because there are seven candidates running. Rodent withdrew on the community TV forum. He actually showed up late for the forum and announced to everyone in the studio that he was withdrawing from the race. And that presumably narrows the field to seven candidates, only the three right-wingers and the four who I mentioned, Clark, Crone, Sugar, and Fitzmaurice, who favor ending the sleeping ban, who favor stopping the beach boardwalk giveaway. Again, I don't think we should entertain illusions about these men. They are in a political arena. They are subject to political pressures. They are subject to the corruptions, blandishments, and the arrogance that goes with office on the city council and affects even the people who had previously been good on a lot of issues, like Scott Kennedy. There was a time when Scott Kennedy actually was concerned about civil rights for poor people. You actually would see him defending the rights of protesters at the town clock, even homeless protesters, God save us. That was back in 1991 when he fought the Jim, goodness, the names begin to flee from me, when he fought the proposal under the Yokoyama City Council to make it illegal to be at the town clock after 1 o'clock at night, the curfew at the clock, or the curfew on the Constitution, as I then called it at that time. Kennedy fought that. So we have council candidates running who are worth their, at least worth a vote in the November election. They may be worth a recall vote later, but they're worth a vote now, and I want people to consider getting on the bandwagon here for the moment. It sounds kind of phony and fishy even to me, backing electoral candidates, but I guess I want to say that candidates who back ending the sleeping ban are candidates who provide a clear alternative, at least around one of the issues, and there are going to be plenty of others we're going to be bringing up, that make this city, well, that destroy what it could be and make it, unfortunately, what it is at the moment. So we need change, real change. Interestingly enough, Chris Krohn is kicking off his campaign at the very time that I'm speaking. There is a, I guess it's a fundraiser to which, as I understand it from talking to Chris yesterday, everyone is invited, and that's going to be, as I view this tiny print thing here, that's at the 1418 Laurel Street at 11 o'clock. Actually, it started a few moments ago. It's a kickoff for Chris Krohn, in case you're interested in helping his campaign or finding out what's going on with his campaign. He's going to be there, presumably with a lot of notables. Krohn is kind of tight and thick with the conservative Democratic Party folks, as well as community activists. He came up as a community activist, as a SCAN activist. He was one of the SCAN people, Santa Cruz Action Network people, that got really upset and tired of seeing Rotkin and Kennedy and Matthews make a mockery by inviting the developers in to clean up the area with, I should say, to lick the plate clean and chew all the meat off the bones. So, Chris Krohn, today, 10 o'clock, I mean 11 to 1, sorry, 11 o'clock to 1 o'clock today at 1418 Laurel. Interesting enough, there's two city council meetings for the beach south of Laurel plan on the 15th, Tuesday, and the 17th, Thursday, at 7 o'clock at the Civic Auditorium, are nowhere mentioned in the Santa Cruz Sentinel. They have plenty of other meetings mentioned. They have a kind of a box score of meetings that you can read in the Sunday Sentinel if you want to waste $1.50 to buy the Sentinel or can take a look at one somewhere else. But there is no mention of the two most important meetings of the fall and of the election around the beach south of Laurel plan. For those of you who don't know what the plan is, I'm going to be playing a brief interview with Sandy Brown shortly, so you can stay tuned and listen to that. Sandy Brown is a community activist with the Community Action Board. Before I do, however, I'm going to run through some other meetings that are coming up. The Beach Area Working Group today, that's a group that is fighting this Canfield Company giveaway, is hosting an educational event at the Cavalry Episcopal Church, that's known as the Red Church downtown, across from the Nickelodeon Theater, at 7 p.m. Then tomorrow, on Monday, is the beginning of the jury trial for Brian Andrus. You may remember Brian Andrus. He was shot 4 times by police officers in various places. He was in critical condition for quite a while, then lapsed back into serious condition, and was able eventually to come out of the hospital. He's charged with multiple felonies. He was, I believe, shot inappropriately by the police, who smashed their way into his home on a so-called domestic violence call. A lot of questions about that case. We raised it around in March. Bullets were flying with kids in the neighborhood. Instead of using alternatives involving lesser force, they chose to shoot this man 4 times and then leave him face down in the mud until the medics came bleeding. Not bleeding to death, as it turned out, but certainly from serious injuries lying there unattended. The actual issue was brought to City Council by activist Becky Johnson at one point, and Celia Scott asked for a report. It was found that the medics eventually had given him some attention, but the key issue of whether the cops on the scene did anything while he was bleeding to death, other than handcuff him, was never addressed, as far as I know. And that is, of course, the crucial issue. And the real issue is going to be whether the cops can cover up this up and a lawsuit that Andrus' attorney has filed against the city for damages in this case by sticking him with one felony after another. Andrus had a baseball bat in his hand, and he hit two officers, one on the finger and one on the chest, an aluminum baseball bat, which is assault, no question about it. He, however, is being charged with very serious felony assault, and the question is whether they created the situation, whether these cops created the situation, whether they fucked up originally, and whether the whole thing should not be really viewed in its proper perspective. We're going to have to deal with these police officers day after day, armed, coordinated, and dangerous, and they need to be given proper training. They need to be made aware that certain kinds of conduct are not simply going to be rubber stamped by Art Danner's DA office and by Chief Belcher's police department and by the city council and the puppy dog Citizens Police Review Board, which I call the Citizens Police Rah-Rah Board, for their lack of any significant controls on the police department, their failure to investigate the Happy John Dime slang of nearly a year ago. In any case, the Brian Andrus trial goes on tomorrow at 9, unless they postpone it, which is always a possibility. But if you want to be sure to be in at the beginning of jury selection, you should check out Judge Barton's court, 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. The real cross-examination opening statements probably won't happen until either Monday afternoon or Tuesday morning. But if you want to be in on the early process of jury selection, check it out tomorrow, 9 o'clock at the county courthouse. Then at 5:30 in the afternoon, you can see our own little toy poodle Citizens Police Review Board do its barking. This is a board that, of course, has gotten a lot of flack for me, and properly so. They are chaired by Lisa Rose, who still doesn't seem to get the picture. She's been cutting back public debate at the board. She's been essentially allowing board members to intimidate members of the public without any kinds of controls. And as a consequence, she usually has Kitten Reynolds in the audience and nobody else. Kitten Reynolds, as you may know, is an activist who seems to side with the police 90% of the time these days, which is unfortunate. And there's a long story around this his history, which at some point we may go into. We have, however, a phone call, so let's hear what that's about.
Okay, now try again. You gonna be around? Okay, hang on, we'll try to call you back. Wait a minute, we may be good now.
Speak up.
Hello, this is Donna from the Tennis Rights Union.
I think we have you. I think we have you.
My apologies, folks. It's that old cranky phone line, and I'm sorry if we blasted out your radio there. I'm going to work on that line. We actually had an incoming call from Donna Dice of the Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz. Maybe we can get somebody to bring her into the studio or fix this line before we go any further. It's just, it's very temperamental, and it's giving me a temper and making me mental, I'll tell you. Continuing with this list of different events coming up in the next week. Again, Monday we have the CPRB, the Citizens Police Review Board, meeting at 5:30. I went into a brief harangue on that one. It's the only public meeting of the month. If you have things you want to say publicly, it does get put onto an audio tape that is available for the public to listen to in the library. And I also continue to encourage people to file complaints, written complaints, with the Citizens Police Review Board, but not with the expectation that anything actually will get done about them, but rather simply to make a record of what's going on in a public place. Ironically, these records then get sealed in the police department personnel files to some extent, but to some extent they're also accessible by the public. So again, 5:30, City Hall, Monday, tomorrow, on the 14th, you can go to the Citizens Police Review Board and observe the Dog and Pony Show, and you can also speak out. You used to be able to speak out for an extended period of time in the half-hour oral communication period. Now, thanks to Tight Lips Lisa Rose, you are not able to do that at all, and you get 3 minutes, and then they shut you down, so a lot of people aren't attending. At least I'm certainly one of them that's not attending for that reason. Then also at 5:30, for those who are interested in talking to the supervisor of this district, the downtown Santa Cruz district, Marty Wormhout, she has a meeting. Now, if you read the Sentinel, they tell you the meeting's at the Cheese Factory, but I suspect they're wrong. I think the meeting is at the Java Junction down on East Cliff and Seabright, I guess it is. That is a 5:30 meeting where you actually may have a long opportunity to talk to Marty almost alone. If you have something to say to the supervisor about medical marijuana, about police misconduct by the deputies, the sheriffs in this case, not the Santa Cruz Police Department, and she will, of course, tell you, oh, that's the sheriff is independently elected, but you can still bring it to the supervisors. If you have concerns about cutbacks in welfare, if you have concerns about what the supervisors aren't doing for low-income housing in this area, if you have concerns about how the district attorney's office is or isn't proceeding with cases like the Brian Andrews case and the Happy John Dine case, you can go speak to Marty Wormhout, who has this public session every week before the Board of Supervisors meeting, which happens throughout the day at the county building the next day, Tuesday the 15th. But again, at 5:30, and I believe it's at the Java Junction, but the Sentinel says it's at the Cheese Factory, and the way to find out about that, if you're really interested, is to give me a call, and I will get more specific information. Wormhout is kind of a strange one. She came out with seven other mayors publicly denouncing the beach boardwalk, or was it the Borch Beadwalk plan, in front of City Hall on Friday in a story in the Sentinel that appeared in yesterday's Sentinel, which really gave heart to a lot of folks opposing the beach flats. I guess they should get heart, really, from lots of people opposing this program. I mean, it's nice to get the politicians in line, and on the other hand, you've got to always start wondering when that happens if we're not at the wangling, dangling, wrangling, and the dickering stage. So, Marty Wormhout is a person to talk to. I think we can actually credit some activists like Phil Baer, like Becky Johnson, like Roxana Kistapache, like Doug Rand, who have been raising this issue publicly in the community. I could name dozens of others, or certainly a dozen others, who have been raising the awareness of the community around the beach area giveaway, the beach boardwalk giveaway. Again, if you're interested in talking to Marty, 5:30 the Cheese Factory tomorrow. Then on Wednesday the 16th at 1 o'clock, interesting event is happening. The week of September 17th through 23rd is Constitution Week. Constitution Week, that's the 211th anniversary of the signing of the U.S. Constitution, which did bring us slavery and things of that sort, but it also brought us writ of habeas corpus. It brought us various protections that we have to consider, that the Constitution usually is separated from the Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights are the amendments that followed the Constitution, giving us freedom of the press, freedom of the speech, actually the right of the government not to interfere with these things, protection from double jeopardy in court, search and seizure protections and so forth. But there are also protections in the Constitution that are worth looking at. And it's interesting, however, that the people who are looking at them are the people who kind of do all the hoopla around the form of the Constitution and then engage in discrimination of their own, or at least they used to in my youth. That's the Daughters of the American Revolution. At 1 p.m. they're going to ring the bells all over the country for the Constitution, and they're going to have an event at the Civic Auditorium. It might be a perfect opportunity for folks who are concerned with constitutional violations by our local city police, by our local city council, by the district attorney's office, by the sheriff's department, and by other jurisdictions, park and rec rangers, you name them, to show up at 1 o'clock on Wednesday at the Civic Auditorium. So that's a possibility. There's more on this list, but I'm going to pause here, try to get the phone working, and play a little music in the interim to keep us sort of well-balanced. Let's do that, and let's hear a little bit from our old pal Mark Levy on the lifestyles of the poor and nameless. Thank you.
American dream, affluent style. But Robin Leach might be surprised by what I see before my eyes. Watching lifestyles of the poor and nameless, sleeping on the city street. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, begging for a bite to eat. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, seldom seen on your TV. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, coming soon, you and me. Just to survive is an awful fight. I spend my time collecting cans while you're out working on your tans. On lifestyles of the poor and nameless, begging for a bite to eat. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, sleeping on a city street. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, seldom seen on your TV. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, coming soon, you and me, you and me. Now 30,000 children died, while some politician lied. They bust the starving kid who steals, while the fat cats make their sweetheart deals. On lifestyles of the poor and nameless, sleeping on the city street. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, begging for a bite to eat. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, seldom seen on your TV. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, coming soon, you and me.
Robin Screech here with another thrilling episode of Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless. Today's journey takes us to the streets of your city, where we'll visit the homeless in their native habitats, street corners of makeshift cardboard shelters, sewer grate and doorway bedrooms, supine kitchens lit by blazing oil barrel fireplaces, alleyways of the addicted, the unemployed, the destitute, the insane, eating and sleeping in the most unlikely places. It's all here on Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless.
Now, in the ghetto, there's always room for the ethnic population boom. The melting pot boils past the brim, while the people's future's looking grim. On lifestyles of the poor and nameless, begging for a bite to eat. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, sleeping on the city street. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, seldom seen on your TV. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, coming soon, you and me, you and me. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless. Of the poor and nameless, coming soon.
And that was Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless, Mark Levy, a great local singer from his album Heroes, Sheroes, or is it Sheroes, Heroes? Yep, it's Sheroes, Heroes, which you can get. It's locally sold. We're now going to do a little dickering around on the telephone, so be patient with us. You may hear some cutoffs and some strange sounds. We're going to try to make sure we can actually reconnect these phone lines up. But don't go away. We'll be back within the next 30 seconds to continue Bathrop Spears Broadsides on 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz.